Today's episode of the Not That Great Podcast is a good one. How about that? It's good. It's me, Camille McMullen. It's Alex Brown. It's Celtics talk. What the fuck? What's wrong with these fools? Get their shit together. Why can't they? Al's got some opinions. I had some questions. My questions were largely uneducated. Alex, of course, is wildly prepared for this discussion. It goes about 45 minutes. Talk a little bit after that about our new, as yet untitled, podcast series about homicide life on the street, which is coming soon. We'll announce a date soon, but we're looking forward to it. I had talked about rewatching Homicide for years, and I didn't have all the discs, and they don't stream, so I had to get all the discs. No, I have all the discs. And then just sometimes I'm just like, you know what? It's not going to be as good as I remember. But Al, thank God, Al Brown brought me down to earth and was like, yo, it holds up solid. It's still really good. And it's a show that I would imagine most of you have not seen, especially of a certain age, you young folk. And I'll be 40 this year. Al's almost 40, I believe, as well. And we used to, not that I was getting invited to a ton of parties in high school, but I did used to turn down leaving the house on a Friday night in high school to watch Homicide. That's verifiable with my cousin Jonathan as well. So that's coming soon. Busy day here today. Got a lot of work to do. Was able to fit in 45 to 50 minutes of nonsense about the Celtics and how they're going to get their shit together with Al Brown. That's coming up. Moose is in the house. It's a rainy Monday here in New Hampshire. Hope it's not too shabby wherever you are. And hope you're staying safe, wear a mask, all that good stuff. We're almost there, guys. Just keep hope alive for a little while longer, and we'll all be hugging each other real soon. So, again, Moose in the house. Celtics, what's the deal? Let's go.
Make it a double, I can take it another. Gets so hard to chase it, live up to. Yeah, it slides away when you're running like my Uncle David. Live to escape it, the trouble you were about to cave in. Give up to talking in your basement, we decided.
Remember that time then?
All right, Alex, this is gonna be a tough one. It's gonna be a hard episode. It's gonna be easy to say stuff, but it's gonna be, the things that are said are gonna be not excellent. All right, so it's easy to be.
You sound a lot more negative than I do, even.
Usually. Yeah. So, also, just to keep Matt Fox satiated, this is Alex Brown, and he's here with me, Camille McMullen. Have to introduce ourselves at the beginning of the episode. So,
you know, like a professional.
Professional. Podcast. Like I do all the time anyway.
Okay.
The Celtics got two over the weekend, right? It's Friday, Indiana, and last night a 1-point win over the Wiz.
An ugly win against an ugly team that they probably shouldn't have won.
Right. So, but before that, a real brutal stretch. Kemba in and out. Smart still not playing. Obviously, he's hurt till after the All-Star break, potentially.
Yeah, calf injury.
And they're in a weak East where sixth place is okay. Even if you slip a game or two under 500, that's good for sixth place. And remember, same rules as last year. So you can dip down as far as 10th and potentially make it into the playoffs.
Yeah, playing.
And they have a power ranking on ESPN of 16th in the out of 30, which seems high. And Danny has no answers, directly quoted. So what started this? And we can go back, I guess. They've lost, I think it's I had looked this up earlier, now it's slipping my mind. They've lost, the games they've lost over the past at least 20 have been to extremely dubious teams. Pistons, and you know, the Wiz are 7-3 in their last 10, so they're making a little bit of a comeback. They're still only 13-19. What is the deal?
what the hell?
What the shit? This team has lost twice to the Pistons, right?
I believe so.
And then the Pistons are the worst team, or the second worst team in basketball.
They're one of them. Yeah. So let's do some of the excuses first, right?
Okay.
So we've had Tatum COVID. Mm. We've had Kemba's knee, Marcus Smart's calf.
Mm.
And as a result, the best four players on the team have only shared the court for about 30 total minutes all season.
Mm-hmm.
They've basically been playing every other day for a while now and have had a lot of road games. So they're probably quite gassed, especially after a cage short off season. But you know, the reality is that despite Tatum and Brown both improving their playmaking ability and having the highest assist numbers of their, you know, careers respectively, the Celtics are one of the worst passing teams in the league. They just aren't moving the ball, which results in kind of a chain of cause and effect. It's like when you don't move the ball, you don't get open shots. Mm. When you don't get open shots, the defense doesn't need to adjust. If they need to adjust, you don't get open lanes to the basket. If you don't get open lanes to the basket, you don't take free throws. So all of that will sort of explain why the Celtics are ranked in the bottom six in assists, shots to the basket, and free throw attempts. And all of those things obviously pile up. And when your two best players aren't at the level yet where they can cover up the deficiencies of your team, you're not going to win many games. And like, I don't think that Brad Stevens is a bad coach. His teams are usually pretty sound, especially defensively and especially when it comes to perimeter defense. But really outside of that, like one magical Isaiah Thomas King in the fourth season, offensively, the Celtics have been pretty vanilla with him at the helm. And like I heard Bill Simmons talking about how it seems like Stevens just doesn't have the team that fits the system that he wants to play. Like I think Simmons used the example of like he wants to be coaching the 2014 San Antonio Spurs, where they were just like fast, moving the ball around so much, shit like that.
Yeah.
But it's like, I mean, that I kind of call bullshit on that. Like you can't just be like, oh, well, the reason we're not having more success is because it's just not the right team. I don't get that. So like you have this great 1-2 punch in Brown and Tatum, but they just aren't ready yet. Like they don't control the game the way that, you know, for instance, even though it's an unfair comparison, the way LeBron can. They can't yet anyways. Mm. And the guy who was supposed to help those two carry some of the load until they were ready to hold the keys is Kemba. And Kemba has, for the most part, been dreadful. I mean, he's either been hurt or, you know, outside of a few games, like the one against the Pacers the other night where he captured some of the old magic and dropped 32. Like, he's been below average. So, according to basketballreference.com, Kemba's overall shooting percentage is third worst on the team, and only marginally better than the corpse of Jeff Teague. Like, that's really bad. That's really bad. So,
what did you think of the? Did we know about Kemba's knee when we signed him?
Yes. Yeah. So I believe I've said this on a podcast with Andy before, but I don't know. I say lots of things and can't keep track of them.
Yeah.
But when we signed Kemba, I basically said like the best case scenario is that we can get two healthy seasons out of him. Mm. 'Cause he's had all these knee injuries. And he's tiny. And when you lose, when basically so much of what you do predicated on speed and agility and guile, and you can't hit those notes anymore when your knees don't work the same way that they used to, you're not as rubbery or or whatever. Like it's tough, and he is such a massive liability on defense. I mean, there was, like, last night, there were moments where he actually looked like a child on the basketball court, like playing defense. It was just that alarming.
So if the best case scenario was getting 2 years out of him, he's in year two right now.
And we haven't had a full, I mean, basically we had half of a healthy season, and then he decided to play, you know, every second of the fucking All-Star game. And he just clearly, he hasn't been able to stay healthy since then. He just really hasn't. And when he has been healthy, he hasn't been 100% healthy, and it's affected everything. And, you know, a lot of people have said, well, you know, just because he has a bum knee doesn't mean his 3-point shooting should go down the way that it has. But yeah, it kind of does, because that's where the foundation of his shot is coming from. And when you're a smaller dude and you need to use every part of your body to get that ball far enough, like, yuck. So he's been, I mean, realistically, this year for the Celtics is kind of a wash. Unless Tatum, Brown, and Smart make another leap, the type of leap where they figure out how to make not just, you know, the other guys around them better, but to make each other better, which they haven't really done yet. Naismith and Pritchard would have to make a leap, and Kemba's knees kind of have to go into a time machine, or they need to make a big move. And there's been a lot of talk via the interwebs about the Celtics making a trade for John Collins on Atlanta, which I would absolutely love, but he probably won't, but I can dream.
Yeah, there's Collins rumors, there's Drummond talk, but it seems
Drummond would be that would not be a good.
You're not a fan of that move?
No, so the argument for Collins over over Drummond, I mean, like, so hypothetical, my dream scenario, Celtics send some combination to Atlanta of Romeo Langford, Carson Edwards, Grant Williams, maybe even the Great White Hope, Peyton Pritchard, and like two first rounders. For Collins,
who that is, seems like a lot for Collins.
No, So Collins, who is a 23-year-old who basically averages a double-double, despite the fact that since Atlanta signed Gallinari, Collins has seen a dip in touches. He's a great athlete. He has moments in the paint where he looks like he's spring-loaded. He gets up so quick. Beast in the paint, and he also hits threes at a very reliable rate of 39%.
Ooh.
Like, that's a big, and he's 20, like, he's the same age as Tatum and Brown, basically. So you have a big who can grab boards, play defense, hit threes, great athleticism, can defend multiple positions. I don't think that that's a lot. And anyways, if we're going to be giving up these first round picks over the next couple of years, how high really are they going to be? They're not going to be lottery. You know,
if you keep playing like this, they might be.
Well, I mean, even still, I mean, despite that they are playing poorly.
Yeah, like, it's about where you play. Like, so,
the East is just incredibly top heavy.
Yeah, they're still going to make the playoffs and those six. So, yeah.
So the only red flag that I can think of with Collins is basically, like, why in the fuck would Atlanta move this guy? Like, there's a part of me that's like, well, that's kind of suspicious. Like, why do you let this dude go? So apparently he is kind of gambling on himself, and they did offer him a 4-year, $90 million extension in the offseason. And turned it down. So it's possible that he's just not feeling it there, and he's not the locker room cancer, but maybe, like, Trae Young is a diva and Collins isn't feeling it. But it's still, like, it's weird. But, I mean, the talent and the natural fit for what the Celtics need, it would just be incredible, but he'll probably end up on, like, fucking Sacramento or something.
Awful. Where do you land on, if we're going Atlanta, where do you land on the Perkins theory that he should come back or bring heat that Rondo should come back to Boston?
Well, so I'm, in theory, I'm not opposed to that at all, because they absolutely need somebody who can move the ball. I mean, so with Gordon Hayward gone, with Al Horford gone, your best playmaker and facilitator and you know, setting guys up is Marcus Smart. And I mean, he's a good, he's underrated as a passer, but that's not like his specialty. And Rondo,
right? But him being the best at that is showing really heavily right now. His absence,
heavy. Exactly. Especially with him out, you know, they don't have people who can move the ball around. But yeah, I don't know why the hell Atlanta signed him to the contract that they did.
What's his deal?
It's like 3 years and way too much money. I don't remember the exact numbers, but if you want to Google that right now, it's
two for 15.
That's still too much.
Yeah, it is.
It's still too much.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, he could help. Another guy that I think the Celtics should not overlook, and I feel like they have, which is kind of dumb, would be JJ Redick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he can't really defend, but nobody in the NBA really defends anymore.
Yeah.
For the most part, so who really cares? And somebody who can move off ball, do catch and shoot threes, pick and pop, high basketball IQ, is going to make the right play, definitely going to make decent passes. Like, I think he would be someone. Either that or Thad Young, who they could just use basically, because they really, outside of Brown and Tatum, they don't have any wings. Like,
yeah.
They just don't. Like, there's no one that can fill that role when they're not there, which is why you've had so many minutes of Grant Williams and fucking Semi Ojeleye, you know, like.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing I would like to see the Celtics do, even if this doesn't really lead anywhere, I feel like it's time to let Robbie Williams loose. I know that he makes bonehead plays on defense and he doesn't really have a sense of space or things like where the 3-point line is, but just let him fucking fly around. Like, mm-hmm. He's young, he's bouncy, plays above the rim. Like, just dial up some of Doc Rivers' inbounding alley-oop plays that he used to call for KG in 2007 and just let the kid fly. Like, utilize this athleticism while he has it. And yes, there will be mistakes, but like, what the fuck do we have to lose? Like, here's an example of like the kind of thing I'm talking about, right? Comparing it to another team. So the Utah Jazz coach, Quinn Snyder, brings in Jordan Clarkson last year. Clarkson's bounced around a bit. He's basically on his third team in 3 years, something like that. I don't remember exact details. But, you know, a lot of people were basically saying that Clarkson was a bust. And Snyder brings him in and basically says, okay, here's the deal. If you promise to only take shots from the 3-point line within 10 feet of the basket or a layup slash dunk, you can shoot as much as you want. And Clarkson was like, oh, wait, really? Shoot. For reals? like, and now he's having a career season, even though it seems like he's playing in a different offense than the rest of the team, which
he's having. I know firsthand he's having a great season because he's on my fantasy.
He's on your team. Yeah. So it sounds bad, but it actually is working really well because it kind of confuses the opposing defense because they have to account for him in like his own separate space as opposed to what the rest of the team is doing. And he's kind of like this weird floating wild card kind of thing. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, Robbie Williams should be shooting threes. That's not what I'm saying. But
of course not. Yeah.
Basically, the approach Stevens could take with him is be like, Rob, here's the deal. Just fly to the rim.
Yeah.
Offense, defense, doesn't matter. As long as you are on the court, just fly to the rim and we will make something happen. Like last night, I don't know if you saw it, but he had this alley-oop where his arm was cocked all the way out to grab this ball while he was in midair. His arm is basically horizontal to the floor and just comes. And I mean, the length and athleticism and hops that this kid has, just let him go. Like sometimes I feel there are certain athletes where coaches make the mistake of being like trying to fit them into some structured system, almost like they're trying to make them like a classical concert pianist, when really what they need to do is just kind of be a jazz player and wing it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's what I want to see with Robbie.
I'm gonna say some names. This is gonna be a fun game. I'm gonna say some names, and I want you to stop me when you figure out where I'm going with this. Okay.
Okay.
Shamond Williams. Do you know who that is?
No.
Do you know who Mike James is?
No.
Let me try this the other way. Do you know who Mark Blount is?
I remember Mark Blount, yeah.
Okay. Do you remember a trade for Gary Payton, Tom Gugliotta, and Michael Stewart?
No.
2005, they sent Walker to... they got Walker for sending away Stewart and Gugliotta. Or sorry, Payton, Stewart, Gugliotta, and a pick. I don't know who the 2015 second round pick became that we traded Sam Cassell for. I don't know who Patrick O'Brien is. I remember getting Nate Robinson for Giddens House and some guy named Henry Walker. So these are all...
You think are terrible trades that Danny made?
They're not just trades. These are deadline trades. Okay? And so... And that's all... These all the ones I've named are under Danny. So... And
Jay Brown, there was another one in there.
There's some of these are like who? Like there's
PJ Brown was like one of the best moves Danny ever made.
Yes. There's Trick or Treat Jeff Green, your favorite player. The acquisition of Jordan Crawford, he didn't pan out. Isaiah Thomas deal panned out for 2 years. Sort of. But between that deal and 2019, they made no deals. 2019 is the last deadline deal, and that was Jabari Bird. Why is Danny trigger shy at the deadline for a larger splash?
Well, I don't know if it's so much that he's trigger shy, because I know that he does try and make moves.
Is he asking too much? Is he not offering enough?
I've heard, I don't know how much truth is in this, but I have heard that there is a little bit of, because of how, you know, the Brooklyn trade went down, which at the time, looked like such a swindle, and now ironically the Brooklyn Nets are at the top of the East.
Yeah.
And we're still trying to figure shit out.
Right.
It's just like, what? But like, because of that, he has gotten somewhat of a Trader Danny kind of reputation, where he is just trying to like swindle someone.
Well, it sounds like he's just trying to make it, trying to make deals just to make deals.
What do you mean by make deals just to make deals?
I mean, hey, we did something, right? I mean, you can say that, like, you have confidence in whoever until you're blue in the face, right? But, like, as we've read over the past, since 2003, all these trades, none of them were made in 2007. So, for obvious reasons, they'd already got everybody. They make a finals in, 2009 or 10 again? Or is it 8 the year after? I don't remember. I remember where I was, but I don't remember what year it was.
The 07-08 season was the championship.
08-09 is the loss of the Lakers.
Garnett got hurt.
No, yeah, Perk was hurt.
No. Kevin Garnett got hurt that season, so they ended up going very far.
Right, and then Perk the next season.
And then the following year, that's when Perk got the knee injury, and they ended up losing to the Lakers.
Okay. So... it seems a lot of times like some of them are just like, well, we can't say he didn't do anything. I mean, he did something. He did trade Marcus Thornton You know what I mean? Like,
no, I mean, but I don't think Danny is necessarily just making empty trades so he can be like, well, I did something. I feel like he does. I think that he's the type of person who is genuinely trying to make the team better. And if he's doing it with like a somewhat low risk, high reward role-playing guy, I don't see any flaw in that. Like, you can find,
okay.
I mean, that's a kind of Belichickian way of kind of trying to swing some stuff.
Yeah. But it's harder to hide on a team of 15 guys versus a team of 55.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, I don't necessarily think that he's reluctant to move. I do think that he is just, he's cautious, and I don't think it's overly cautious either. I think he potentially wants to maximize every single deal that he makes or presents. And, you know, I don't get the sense that he's particularly well liked from a lot of other
GMs
and,
yeah,
and people running the show. Like,
yeah, there's that thing around right now.
Pat
about
Riley very famously wrote a letter on company letterhead telling Danny to go fuck himself.
Yeah.
There's
a thing out now about how he tried to trade Kemba knowing his knee was all effed up. And I guess the price was high. GMs aren't happy about that. You know,
and then
obviously
the Isaiah Thomas injury as well.
That too.
You know, when that trade happened, there was issues on that one.
All right. So now we've, regardless of what moves are made or what no name players I named, whose names I had to look up because I wouldn't have remembered them off the top of my head if you paid me. So that obviously Danny's reputation somewhat, at least somewhat, hampers their ability to make a move. But if we put that aside and we go through this All-Star break and or this trade deadline, I should say, with no moves, what's your honest reaction to that? You've already said that you think that the year is probably a wash regardless. So yeah. Would you prefer to hold now? Just like, hey, listen, this year ain't the year. Everybody come back healthy next year type of thing. You know, medium draft pick. Maybe we deal it, maybe we don't. I don't know who's coming up in free agency next year. So, but I can't speak on that. But are you fine with no deals being made at the deadline this year?
I mean, I just don't, unless there's a really great package available. I would be, even with the Collins thing that I had mentioned before, I mean, if they, I believe that will put them into luxury tax. And
yeah,
is it worth paying the luxury tax if you really don't have a realistic chance of taking down Brooklyn?
Yeah, if you come to the deal at, you know, 20-20, like, you know, you're not playing well and then adding a piece to help you play better. You're just like scraping by.
Yeah.
It would be wasteful.
I wouldn't be terribly upset if they didn't use that trade exception right away.
Yeah.
Just because, I mean, yeah, like I just don't see any sort of move that puts them over the top and puts them into real contention. I'm kind of resigned to just hope that they can make the season a little bit more entertaining, play some better basketball. But I'm really going to be surprised if there aren't some changes made, whether it's I don't necessarily think Brad is in trouble per se, but there might be a situation where Danny kind of steps down and has more of like a consultant senior basketball operation sort of thing. And somebody else comes and starts doing the GM stuff. Potentially. There's been a lot of talk that his son is supposed to take over the job, which I think is probably the worst possible fucking idea.
That's like if Eric took over for Donald. Like,
I mean,
would just be like a puppet.
That's a little bit of an extreme comparison.
Well, I'm just saying, like, it would still be Danny. Just his son would be the body, but Danny would be the voice.
It's flagrant fucking waspy fun nepotism.
Of course.
So I prefer that not happen.
Yeah. Same.
Yeah. So I would like, I would like some things to happen, but I don't know if this is the year where it does. But Wick Grusbeck is going to have to kind of, demand more of people and hold more people accountable and maybe put some, flames to the feet of some of these fucking guys and demand results, because you can't have two guys at the level of Tatum and Brown and just not utilize them to their full capacity, especially now. Like, the granted, neither one of them will probably be at their peak, like their apex, for like two more seasons, but you gotta do it now. You've gotta try and win with these young guys now. I just hope they can keep it all together, because I would really love to root for the two of those guys for like the next 8 to 10 years. And I hope we can, but who knows? We'll see. There's just been so many what if kind of scenarios that have happened over the last few years with the Celtics. Kind of all starting at the Kyrie trade. How many things could have gone differently, and just odd.
Do you, if you have to pick between the two, do you trade for Collins this year, or do you sign Drum, try to sign Drummond, because he's a free agent at the end of the season, unrestricted.
I wouldn't try and sign Drummond. I mean, he's
So
good
you
at
don't
what
want him
he
at
does.
all, no matter what.
No.
Okay.
I mean, he's good at what he does, but
What he does is not enough.
it's an antiquated style of basketball. I mean, he can put up pretty good fantasy basketballers because he can grab you 20 boards in a game, but he really doesn't affect winning, you would need him on a very, very, very specific type of team for him to be successful. If he was a better passer, his value would probably tick up a little bit, but really he's just, kind of a moose in the paint, grabs boards and,
What if Montrezl Harrell declined his player option? Not that he would. He's playing with LeBron. He got a ring last year, right?
Yeah,
He was
I
there
know.
last
I
year,
mean,
right? So.
it's a he wasn't on LA last year.
Okay,
He
right.
was
So,
on
yeah,
Los
yeah, that's
Angeles.
right. He was out in the offseason. Okay.
On the other
Right, that's
LA.
right. Yeah, same building.
But he had, I believe he had tested positive for COVID and then came back to the bubble and was just absolutely fucking atrocious in the bubble and probably cost himself money.
So he'd be cheap.
He doesn't really play defense very well either. He is a bit of a defensive liability, but offensively he can give you some stuff. If the price was right, that's maybe I would be okay with that.
His player option is for 9.5. So, I mean, if you got a
Yeah,
player,
I don't.
if you got a player option, take it. So that's what I think. But yeah, I don't. It's tough to see, because I still consider Tice to be the weakest link in our starting lineup, and I guess you could say, all right, well, instead of making a signing like this, we're gonna let Rob go, right? So like, but I still, it's what I'm looking at here is a lot of age in the power forward, and they call it center, but it's not really center, position. So, and a lot of money too. Aldridge is 20, 36 years old. He makes $25 million. Griffin, 32 years old. He's making 35 player option. He's not turning that down from Detroit. He could play there and do nothing for whatever and just make 35 million, like no problem.
I'm pretty sure Blake wants to get out of there, so I would be.
I would stay in Detroit for $10,000. That's $10,003. No pressure whatsoever. And his, but his, I mean, he's if he declines 35,
I mean, the
no
thing
one's
is,
paying him 35.
he would be stupid to turn it down. I
Yeah.
know he wants to get out of there, and he's probably banking on himself. Do you know that he hasn't dunked in over a year?
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't know that.
That is alarming.
It's ridiculous.
The dude who jumped over a Kia in a
contest. Not that long ago. Yeah. But I don't know. I just like, and I guess this happens every year to me, kind of. I just kind of look at who's available. And I'm like, meh, to a lot of them. And part of that is, you know, not necessarily being that educated in the intricacies of who fits with who as far as players playing styles concerned and stuff like that. But I do know that I don't want to pay through the nose for a 32-year-old Blake Griffin.
Oh, absolutely not. You would like, if Danny even attempted to make a move for Blake Griffin at this point in time, yeah. I would be calling for him to be fired.
When it was first rumored, I was all about it. It was first rumored like 5-6 years ago.
Yeah, that maybe was five, longer. 6 years ago.
And like, yeah, but I was all about it then. But then I'm like, you know, obviously.
Well, 5-6 years ago, he was, you know, like
jumping over cars.
Well, jumping over cars, but also, I mean, you know, aside from the jumping over cars, like his game had developed, and he was like getting MVP nods and stuff.
Yeah.
So,
let me throw one more name at you. He is a restricted free agent and still on his rookie deal. It is Jarrett Allen. How do you feel about him?
Yeah. No, I am a big Allen fan.
Cool.
He is athletic, strong, fast. Defensively can absolutely lock down the paint, block shots, grabs boards, limited offensively. But defensively sound that he can kind of make up for it. Yeah, I like Allen. I mean, I would much rather have Allen than Tristan fucking Thompson. You know,
Tristan Thompson, just, I hate him.
I mean, every, you know,
I hate him.
Like, the thing is that he's, you know, he's on, to say that he's on the downslope of his career would be, you know, nicely.
Yeah, seriously.
He ain't what he used to be physically. He did log a lot of minutes playing in a lot of those postseasons with LeBron and doing a lot of dirty work in those. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while, like, I feel him and Daniel Theis, actually, when they're on the court together, have figured out like a kind of fun little high-low game that they do pretty well. They function on the floor well together. But mm-hmm. I mean, that needs to be like a second unit sort of situation and not, you know, playing big minutes in the fourth quarter.
Mm.
And I really need Semi Ojeleye to be on a different team. Like, I'm just done. Like, I can't fucking look at that guy again.
Can't fucking look at him.
Jesus.
What's the cap this year? Do you know?
It got brought down because of the loss of revenue because of that whole pandemic thing.
Oh, right. I don't know. So I think it came down from like 190 to like 170 or something like that, right?
Yeah, something in that.
I don't know. There's a little money there next year. Celtics are at 132 next year, so. And they're under the cap right now. They're at 120. So. This is a funny list. Next year, Chicago's cap number is $69.6 million. And both years after that, it's zero. Well, y'all better get some shit. Yeah, y'all need to get some shit together. The Knicks, next year, $51.3 million. The year after, $3 million. And the year after that, zero. Classic Knicks. Hey, Knicks are above 500, so.
They've been playing well, man.
Yeah.
Tibbs has done a good job with that team.
Yeah, tell me about them. What's the why do I have to be sitting at home upset that the Knicks are one or two games better than the Celtics? Is it just the low bar they have to clear that everyone's so impressed? No one expects anything from the Knicks. They're like the Mets.
So I mean, you know, part of it is like you have guys that are Tibbs is being allowed to do his thing, you know, without any sort of dumb bullshit James Dolan interference. And like Julius Randle has been amazing. But yeah, like Randle and Barrett have been playing really well together. Yeah. I mean, I don't really know what to tell you other than like you have Tibbs who basically always demands, you know, high energy, high effort, especially on the defensive end. Randle and Barrett, they basically have been, you know, like Randle is finally playing like the guy that the Lakers thought that they were getting.
Yeah.
Randle is playing. He could win most improved player of the year.
Wow. You know? All right.
I mean, he really has. He's been playing out of his mind. And Barrett, who's finally coming on and showing some of the promise that he showed when he was at Duke.
Duke, yeah.
They've got skill, talent, genuine upside. They're getting chemistry together. I feel like it's them just playing their game and not really having a ton of pressure on them either, you know?
Yeah.
They really don't. There hasn't been an opportunity for Knicks fans to start booing them in Madison Square Garden. So maybe that has something to do with it too.
I feel like that's always helpful.
But yeah, I mean, you know, I haven't watched enough of them to give you like, here's the specific thing that they've done, but Randle and Barrett playing really well. Tibbs went out and got Derrick Rose.
Yeah.
Because he couldn't help himself.
Yeah.
He had to.
Yeah. Oh, I know that guy.
And Rose knows the system, even though if I was a Knicks fan, I would want them playing some of the younger guys. I think his name is Quigley or something
Quigley,
like that.
Yeah, Emmanuel Quigley. Is playing well. Getting some rookie of the year buzz.
He should get some more minutes, but you know, I think Tibbs knows that he's educating some of the young guys here. I mean, I kind of hope they do well. I mean, as much as I absolutely detest Knicks fans because they're the worst.
Yeah.
Basketball's just more interesting when the Knicks are bigger.
Well, would you be?
We haven't felt that since the 90s.
Would you be a decent person if your team was just constantly shit on and terrible all the time? Like, you've obviously never been a Phillies fan.
Yeah.
I was a real dick until 2008.
I mean, you know, I guess we were a little bit saltier as Red Sox fans before 2004. And
definitely.
Patriots fans before 2001. So,
yeah,
I guess losing can, you know.
Yeah, it hurts, man.
Make you salty.
Yeah, extended losing is tough. Again, Philly sports fan here, so. You know that the Philadelphia Phillies have lost the most professional sports contests in the history of sports?
Yes, they've had that record for a couple of years now.
It's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
we're gonna hang on to that.
I remember hearing that stat years ago. So yes, I don't think it's going anywhere.
Yeah. Well, at least we're consistent. So let's take a walk on Boston. Let's be like, all right, you know what? It sounds like it's gonna be kind of like a pause year or whatever. And, you know, COVID is knocking shit out of whack. Untimely injuries/injuries that we knew about and decided to ignore. And hope for the upside, pray for the best. If you are watching a team, let's say you can watch right now, you can choose to watch any team night in, night out. It's not Boston. Who's impressing you the most in the league? In the association.
So in terms of fun to watch or in terms of just like ass kicking, what it just.
Give me some fun. Give me fun to watch. We'll do that.
Charlotte. Charlotte is really fun to watch, man.
It
took Jordan a really long time, but he looks like he put together an actual fucking team.
I have to watch a ball. I don't want to watch a ball.
Oh. He's exciting as hell. Gordon, even though I know he had a hand injury again, but he's been playing the best basketball since he left Utah. Terry Rozier is shooting like 45% from beyond the arc.
No,
like,
those names sound familiar. Weird. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. but yeah, no, like they are an incredibly exciting team, and they're fun. LaMelo really does make it a more fun watch because of, you know, the angles that he's able to do, the fact that he's a point guard who fights for rebounds. You know, yeah, they're exciting as hell. And then the other team, just through sheer dominance of will, has been Utah.
Mm.
Like, they have been incredible. All of the questions that people had about, you know, Rudy and Donovan, and whether or not they were going to be able to have any sort of chemistry after Rudy's very famous microphone molestation leading to a positive COVID test moment.
Pepe, like, that's out the motherfucker.
Clarkson, like I you know, mentioned before, is having mm-hmm. a career year. Who the fuck is their forward?
Is it Favors in Utah?
No, O'Neal. O'Neal?
Royce O'Neal.
Royce O'Neal. There we go. I was like, Rudy? What the fuck? There's not two Rudys on that team. I knew it was something with an R. Royce O'Neal. I mean, he's having like borderline defensive player of the year season. It's just that he's on the same team as Rudy Gobert. So yeah. It's like completely
no shot.
Not even recognized. Yeah. But he has been like ultimate 3-and-D guy for them. Yeah, they're exciting as hell to watch. I really like that Utah team a lot.
Is it their championship to lose this year, or are we got to wait for AD to come back?
Yeah, so I mean,
because the Jazz smashed the Sixers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I feel like Utah really, really is a contender.
Okay.
This year, and I know that there have been Utah Jazz teams in the past that have shown tons of promise in the regular season and then completely fall apart in the playoffs.
Yeah. With a good big guy and a good little guy. Is that a thing that Utah does?
Yeah. Yeah. they had that. They definitely had that. But they have more than that this time around. Like Bogdanovich, even though he's been a little bit up and down, more so in the earlier part of the season, but he's really good. Especially in like a one-on-one situation. Donovan is, you know, he's Spider-Man. He can do so many different things. Michael Conley, who was so bad last year that they.
Hello. So bad last year that they what? We lost Al Brown.
What happened?
Hey, you're back. Nice. You hear me?
Yeah.
All right, good. Yeah, we lost you for a minute.
What the hell was I saying?
I don't know. I'm not cutting it out. I don't have time for that shit.
So, where did you lose me?
You said Mike Conley was so bad last year that blank.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So they had to bench him, right?
Yeah.
And it was because he basically had no idea how to play with Rudy Gobert, because he had spent his entire career playing with Marc Gasol and Zach Randolph,
yes.
who don't exactly play above the rim.
Right.
You know, like, probably the vertical between both of them combined is about 6 inches. So he had to learn how to play with Rudy and within this new system. First time he had really changed teams in his career. Mm. And it's all clicking right now. And Quinn Snyder has done a really masterful job making this function in such a well-oiled machine. Like, yeah. It is brutally efficient on both ends of the floor. Like, defensively, they're solid, and then their numbers are almost exclusively like easy baskets right at the rim for Rudy, like lobs and shit like that, or it's three pointers, and they're just killing it.
All right. I mean, so if we're looking at them in a final, in a, you know, conference finals matchup, you need AD there to disrupt that. So. But it sounds like they're able to kind of get around that.
Like, Rudy is big enough and obviously good enough defensively. We're talking about defensive player of the year
twice, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, basically every year he's in contention for it.
Yeah.
So that is definitely going to nullify some of Davis's powers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's a lot of matchup issues that the two of them can't necessarily overcome on their own, LeBron and AD.
Yeah.
Because I feel like just 1 through 5, they are more talented than the Lakers. Where yeah. obviously the 1 and 2 for the Lakers are more talented, but
yeah,
overall starting lineup, I think it's just a better constructed team, in my opinion.
All right. Well, time was up, so we'll have to leave it there. And again, I can say 1,000 times I intend to watch more basketball, but I just can't. You know, it's tough, man. It's tough. It's hard out here for a pimp. You know what I'm saying? Let me real quick. Let me see what time is it. I got two. All right, we got a couple minutes. So you've watched 2 discs of Homicide: Life on the Street, which is going to be our little side pet project. Whenever I can get my shit together, we get this off the ground. Mm-hmm.
I was hoping for more of a dramatic reveal for this.
I revealed on the last episode came on the intro.
Oh, that's right.
So
I had forgotten.
I'm going to ask one question because this is another thing that gives me pause about watching it. I think that I've built it up too much in my head. Is it living up to the expectations of the quality that you remember?
Oh my fucking God. Yes.
Really?
Oh my God. Yes. Yes.
That makes me real happy.
Yes. It is one. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Okay.
It is 100% holding up.
Andre Brower is my favorite actor of all time. So
yes.
Okay.
I have always loved him, and it was in part because of that show.
Yeah.
And man, his like his introduction basically into the series is just so fantastic. And one thing that I had completely because he wasn't in it for the entire thing, like Brower yeah. was.
Right.
Was the Fat Baldwin was on that fucking
yeah,
show.
Dude, Daniel. Yes.
Which I had completely forgotten about.
And he's not bad.
I mean,
he's not bad.
He's definitely the weaker link.
He's, I mean, of the, yes, of the Baldwins, but he's just like, he's a perfectly.
No, in the show. In the show.
Well, still of the Baldwins too. But like, yes. He's also a perfectly fine, schlubby cop. Like him and Crisetti are partners, right? So like, there's just like two, or Crisetti's partners with Clark Johnson.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's partners with Melissa Leo.
That's right. Okay. So, and yeah, then he's just like a whatever. He's just a typical.
With Brower and a couple of things. Yeah. Like he's the schlubby, like fucking, yeah. like I'm not a racist, but you know, kind of.
Yeah, exactly. He plays that well.
Yeah. Right? But like, I mean, you know, it's like, you know, him and Richard Belzer are probably like the least, I don't want to say natural or believable, but like, yeah, I feel like
Belzer, Munch is furiously unbelievable. Like he's just him. He's just like a comedian. He's just a stand-up comedian that happens to carry a badge.
That is
always making, he might be my least favorite detective on the show.
Detective Munch.
Yeah. And by the way, he shows up in, Law and Order too, SVU for a while.
Yes, yes.
Which is kind of strange, but exactly. He can't play anything else. It's I'm real psyched to get back into this. Pembleton doesn't, when he lands with Bayless, when they become partners, that's when it's like, yo, those two together are, that's good television. Them two in the box. Like, yeah, come on. That's my Friday nights. In high school.
That's good TV right there.
Not going out. Hey, you want to come over to so-and-so's house for a party? Homicide is on at like 10, so.
Yeah.
If you guys are going to be real quiet at the party, cool. Like, but otherwise, so I'm going to stay home.
It was so wild just watching the first couple of episodes, how many people were like side characters in it.
Yeah, you said, so, yeah.
Like the dude who played the, did you ever watch Ozark?
Yes, I have some, yes.
Okay, so the preacher who loses his mind, basically.
Yeah. I forget the actor's name.
Yeah, I can't remember his name either, but he's in it as like some, you know, kid who murdered a guy at a motel or something like that.
Yeah.
Randomly, the woman who was Wesley Snipes' love interest in the first Blade movie, she's the woman who had the baby in a cage.
Had
Edie Falco and Luis Guzman in the same episode.
There's a bunch of, I think that, I want to say that Robin Williams wins an Emmy for, for the fire episode.
That's later on.
That episode is heartbreaking.
I'm not there yet, but.
Yeah, no, it's not till like season 3 or 4, but like, ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh, all right, I'm ready to get back into this now.
Got the juices going?
I'm ready to rock this shit, man. Ready to do this shit. So yep. we're gonna start that soon as possible. Until then, Al Brown, I love you, buddy.
Love you too.
All right, sweetie, so love you so much. Talk to you soon, bud.
All right, peace out. Later.